As a parent, have you ever had anyone dress you down just saying control your children or
Oh,
give
yeah,
you that
but
look of?
I don't know. No, you certainly get that look when they're having tantrums when they're little, when they're just having complete meltdowns. And usually it's you get the looks from people who don't have children, because once you've had children, you just go, oh, better you than me.
I give those looks all the time.
Yeah, exactly. I used to. I'd just be like, oh my God, just can't you keep your child in check? Do you know how obnoxious they are? And you're being selfish by not controlling them. And then you're on the other side of it and you're like, oh, like the if the roof caved in right now, that would be a good way to solve this problem. But yeah, now it's someone else's kid, you just like give them a little nod as you go past now. Okay.
Good luck with that.
I'll leave you to it.
I think I just live in the complete brutal other side of that, and that's just two gay men walking through the supermarket and their child's just screaming at the top of their voice. It's just like,
You
fucking just drown it. Just drown it.
I think we found the start to the episode pretty already. Good work. All right, well.
I tend to think that maybe we should just have children so I can have a bit more fucking empathy.
Empathy is overrated. All right, so this is episode 72, and joining me is Scott Cacaldi, who's in Melbourne. Hey, Sooty, how are you?
Hey, Maddie B, I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well.
now? Sooty and I go back over 20 years. We met through mutual friends in Newcastle when I was at uni. Ended up living together for a while. They were glorious times, weren't they?
They were lovely, lovely times. 20 years, yeah, okay. I've got a really horrible memory, so I'm
Right.
glad you remember all this.
So am I just going to be asking you questions and then saying, no, that's wrong, Sooty. That's not how it happened.
I reckon you're going to be telling me a lot of things that I don't know.
Well, I know it's over 20 years, because this month is the like 20 years since I started teaching, and that's when I left Newcastle.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. So when do you think, I think I moved into Denison, what, early 2000s, something like that? Is
Yeah,
that?
something like that. Yeah. It wasn't a long time, but it was a very nice time though, wasn't it? It was very
I
very
felt
nice
like
last month.
I was at Denison for a very long time. I left Denison in late 2004.
Yeah, so if you've listened to the last couple of episodes, you would have heard JC, Jess Ripper, and of course Wiggins. He's been on this podcast 83 times. So we all lived in the same street in Hamilton and Newcastle. Yeah, I think you ended up living there the longest.
I replaced
Yeah, we
JC
traded.
maybe.
There was a trade made. We traded out JC, episode 68, and we brought in episode 72.
So you traded out the extreme sports
Yeah.
triathlon dude that would just climb up the walls for a lethargic Pizza Hut worker.
It really tipped the balance, didn't it? Because Wiggins was certainly towards the lethargic pizza worker end of the scale. It certainly was more noticeable in the house. There was a lot more discussion on should we buy a deep fryer
We
than
took a
should.
lot of time discussing the pros and cons of
You know
buying it.
what? Sometimes I felt living with you two that I was like the sober parent. Like I would get home, and you and him would have like butcher's paper all over the house. Like, no, we've worked it out. We'll get like a deep fryer, a huge one, and then we can make heaps, and then we can sell it to like our friends. We can make hot chips and sell them to. And then I go, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. Sorry. And you'll be like, oh, I know. That sounds awful. That sounds like there'd be a jar or like a chip fryer with fat in it that's just congealed.
And the thing was, we did actually go out. Me and Wigo did spend a day going out and looking at deep fryers. So I do vividly remember that. And I'm pretty sure you were just like, guys, this is not a smart idea.
I
And
felt really
if.
bad. It was one of those things where it was like they really. Oh, if there was another parent there, we would have said, "Well, they really want one." No. Don't be stupid. They don't need one. They want one, but do they need one? Oh, I love the image of you and Wiggins it needs like a soundtrack and just going from store to store with your notebooks.
It's great. Yeah, it was really, really good. But I know how it would have ended up.
Yeah.
It would have ended up like our backyard pool.
Yes, exactly.
Just would have been not cleaned, and it just would have been this horrible thing that we used once.
Yes.
And then it would have been, yeah, you know,
made a dead patch, dead patch somewhere in the house before someone had to empty it in the worst way possible.
Oh, yeah, it was not pretty. I remember I had to do that. It was not, I'm pretty sure I did that.
If I was clever enough, I would have said, no, you don't understand. You've got the joy out of it already. Looking together, spending the day, that's the best part of you getting a deep fryer. Like, simple as that. That was the best part. It was always going to be the best part, was the excitement of walking around looking at deep fryers.
If you think of how creative we were after, you know, maybe one or two big nights, you know, a little puff here, a little puff there.
Yeah.
And the amazing things that we came up with.
That is true.
Being able to cook. Imagine what we could have done with a deep fryer. Like,
that is true. The issue, only issue is our diet wasn't great because, more importantly, you were working at Pizza Hut. So every now and then, I don't know what the record was, but I think one night you bought, was it 8 pizzas home with you?
Oh, yeah, I reckon 8's probably, yeah. I would have, if I knew the boys would be home and the PlayStation was on and everyone was very toast. Well, that
Formula One was another one too, right?
Well, the Formula One was on and everyone was in a good mood, that those pizzas wouldn't last long.
No.
And sort of, you would, when you worked, the intricacies of working at a Pizza Hut, you prepare a certain amount of pizzas, and if they don't get sold at the end of the night, they all just go into the bin.
Yes.
So I cooked them up, put them in boxes, and would always bring them back, but I'd always make one special pizza for myself.
And this is the question that Wiggins had, was, can you explain the greatest pizza that you made? And what?
I'm not sure whether you're allowed to use the terminology.
Maybe the initials of the second part would be the easiest way to explain it.
The fat C special.
Yeah.
I think it was called.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure it consisted of a stuffed crust.
Yeah.
And maybe would have put bacon in the stuffed crust. a heavy layer of cheese. I don't know whether I put sauce on it. I felt like I didn't put sauce on it. And then pepperoni, every meat that was there. So bacon, ham, chicken, and I think there was then a shitload more cheese, oregano, and that was the FC special. No, all right. The P. It was fat, PHAT.
That in so many ways, beautiful. Oh God, yeah. I mean, that was great. That was always great. Sooty's home. It's like, Dad's home. Has he got anything for us? Oh yeah, 8 pizzas. Fantastic.
And some maxi bonds, maybe, or something like that.
So great. Now, just an aside. My nephew just started working at a pizza shop, and recently he made a rookie error of eating a pizza that they thought was excess. Because they were like, oh, we've got one pizza left. Him and his mate had to lock up. They ate it at 11:25, closing at 11:30. And then at 11:28, someone came back and said, yeah, we ordered like 4 pizzas and we only picked up 3. So they had to make another one. And while the man waited.
You'd have to start all the equipment back up. And like, you know, wait for your temperature and your oven to get up to heat. Just a nightmare. Horrible. Yep.
Just a nightmare. So that's what we said. Lesson learned. Wait till 11:31. And you say, sorry, we're closed.
That's right.
That pizza has gone in the bin. As you're eating it. It's in the bin. We've got rid of it. Sorry about that.
I do remember with the, going back to the F, the fat C special, is you had to get it home pretty quick because
it melted the box.
The oil that would start to puddle in the bottom, the box would start to be see-through by the time you got home.
Oh, that is outrageously good. All right. Now, I've got to move, change topic completely. Another question from Wiggins. This one's, he says, it's a little trite, But he, I don't think he ever asked you, which is, what was the hardest thing about being a gay man in Newcastle in the 90s? He said, fuck me, that must have been tough.
Getting laid was quite difficult.
Really?
Yeah, it was quite difficult in Newcastle. The thing, and you know, I don't want to bag anyone out who was in Newcastle that was gay at the time, but yeah, I'm sure they're
listening. They're all listening.
The thing is that I noticed when you were in Newcastle is that it was a very, very small town mentality.
Yeah.
And if you didn't fit into that box, if you weren't, you know, blonde, bronzed, you know, waxed,
yeah,
thin, twinky sort of guy,
like our mutual straight friend Craig, he would have had no issues.
Oh, he would have had an asshole like a Stargate. It was it was quite difficult, and so you'd have to. Yeah, I remember very rarely picking up in Newcastle. There was only one gay bar. I don't even think that exists anymore.
Right.
In Newcastle. And I would go there, and generally what I would do is play the poker machines and get really drunk. would be basically it. But it was really, really difficult because you weren't in that box. You know, you didn't sort of fit into that ideal. So I always was, I never really fit in the gay community or the straight community in Newcastle.
Right.
So when I came to Melbourne, like Melbourne's just this enormous, huge melting pot.
Yep.
And when you know, a big, hairy, burly guy like myself walks into a bar, like there's a bear bar called The Laird.
Yep.
You sort of know, you get lecht at, and people admire you, and people talk to you, and like people want to have sex with you. And so, yeah.
What was that like? I don't know. What was that like for your ego to move to Melbourne and have that like situation change?
It was kind of like I had this feeling in the back of my mind that it would be vastly different,
right,
if I came to Melbourne, and it just confirmed that it was. As much as I love Newcastle, and I really, really do love Newcastle, it was becoming too familiar and too boring, and it just wasn't, and I think my friends were doing things that I knew that I couldn't, like I was never going to enjoy those aspects of it.
Right. You know what I mean? Right. So, I mean, I only lived in Newcastle for 3 years, but I found that to be the case as well. Like I have a distinct memory of the start of 2001, I guess, when I finished uni, of, I think I've got to get out of this town. Like I just felt like, yeah, it was all the same. We were always having a great time, but it just very suddenly hit me that, like, oh, well, I'm just doing the same things, and I'll continue doing the same things.
100%. And it really felt like it was a lifetime that I was there. And as much as I loved where we lived, and I loved Denison Street, and you know, Denison Street wasn't as great when you guys left, when you and Wego left, but it was still pretty good. I felt like built up some pretty cool relationships and some pretty awesome dudes sort of went through those rooms. But I remember still being in this job, working as a Pizza Hut manager, which was a job that I was only going to do for a really short time. That's the only reason I said I'd do it was, you know, so that I'd just make a little bit of money. And then I found that I was just doing it for a really long time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, several years had gone past, and I remember being at the Kent, at the trivia night at the Kent.
Yeah, the Tuesday night, every Tuesday night for three, four years.
I just went, I can't do this another Tuesday night. I've got to get out.
Yep.
And I don't know whether I ever would have got out. The fact was Craig Phillips came back.
Yeah, from England, right? Like, we were living in England. Yeah, from England. Bit.
And I think he'd left a pretty serious relationship, and I think he wanted a new start. And he was just like, you've always talked about going to Melbourne. Let's go to Melbourne. Tony's down there, our friend Tony Sidebottom.
Yeah.
Let's go to Melbourne. And so Craig was just like, let's do it. And I went, fuck it, yeah, let's do it. And I didn't honestly think that we would do it, but we did. And yeah, I've absolutely loved every minute of it.
Yeah, Melbourne, there's a lot of our friends who, you know, we went through uni with and all that stuff, and then that moved to Melbourne around the same time in the 2000s, I guess. There's like four or five of like my closest friends all seemingly at once decided Melbourne's the place to be. And I've heard that. I have heard that people from Newcastle tend to gravitate towards Melbourne over Sydney. And
I've always been asked that question, why didn't you go to Sydney?
Mm.
And I recently went on a holiday and did spend a few days in Sydney, and I really enjoyed it. But I think growing up, from a Newcastle perspective, it was that sort of like people from Sydney are obnoxious, and it's you know, it's pretty shit. It's a bit of a rat race.
Yeah, you're always like a guest, right? You're always a visitor.
Yeah,
I think that's part of it, right?
I hated like as a person who loves driving, I hate driving in Sydney. It's just fucking horrible.
Yeah,
and I think it was this thing, and I'm glad I've sort of dispelled it a little bit when I went and visited recently. It's a little bit different, but it was just like, no, fuck Sydney. And I remember visiting Sydney and like people were almost pushing you out of the way. And then right. I visited Melbourne and went to the Formula One when I was younger. And I remember getting a map and like two or three people stopping and asking me where I wanted to go. And I was just like, that's my sort of town. Like I much prefer that sort of pace. And it's one of those things, I don't know whether it's true, but people always say from Sydney, it's how much money you make. Whereas that's not something that people are a little bit ashamed of wealth in Melbourne.
I've only visited Melbourne, but I find it really close to Newcastle in terms of the feeling of it. It's hard to explain the feel of a city, but that's just the way it is. It just seems...
I felt like, to me, it felt like an old, like it feels like a, it felt like a big Hamilton, because Hamilton had this diversity.
Yeah.
You know, like awesome old Greek people hanging around.
Hamilton and Newcastle could be like in Brunswick Street, right? Like it's just, is that right? Am I getting my
number? Yeah, definitely.
Right. Yeah. It's like you said, Greek, Italian, old money heritage.
And I think. And I kind of like, and I was always wanting something a bit different, because it was always, I don't know, maybe it's not correct, but it was always that sort of thing in Newcastle, like you'll do what your dad did and your dad did what his dad did and so on. And it was all very white bread. Everything was the same. And I get really bored with repetition and things that are always the same. So I really quite liked the cultural diversity and to be honest, I like the liquor license laws in Victoria as opposed to New South Wales, because they're real pricks about everything in New South Wales. But
everything can be a wine bar. Everything's a wine bar.
Well, that's right. But I think that's changed nowadays. I really enjoyed visiting Newtown recently and hanging around in Marrickville. And it's a really awesome place.
So what, like you talked about Craig just saying, well, we've always wanted to go to Melbourne. Was that a risk for you? Did you feel like, This was it. This was the chance, I guess.
Yeah. I'm a person who doesn't make changes very often. I'm very, very comfortable. As I said, like I took the management job with Pizza Hut just to do it for like 12 months, and I was there several years later. I think I was, I clocked up long service leave at there, I think, at one stage.
Right.
And so I don't do things, and I mean, like even moving out, like it took me forever to move out. And so I always used to like consistent sort of things that I know things are going to happen, how it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So it was a huge risk for me. I didn't have much money saved. I had fuck all money saved.
Yeah.
I didn't have a job lined up. We didn't have a place to live when we moved down here.
Yeah, as someone who's traveled with Craig Phillips, that was never an issue, and we slept on some floors of kindly strangers in, I think it was Dublin, because we just thought we'll turn up and get a place. And it was the busiest weekend of the year, public holiday, whatever it was. Ended up just the woman who ran one of the B&Bs was like, oh no, well, keep looking. And if you don't find anything, come back. And we ended up sleeping on her floor. Otherwise, oh, wow. God knows what would have happened. Yeah, because that's how we rolled.
Well, I mean, it was Craig came down a couple of days before I did. He flew down and was staying with Saidi. I basically packed up my life in a car. My car was just full to the brim of all my stuff to the point where I couldn't see out the back window or even out the passenger side window. So I drove 12 hours down to Melbourne and then just like, cool, like, how'd you go with getting us a place? I haven't quite done that yet. quite hard for him to find us an apartment. But we ended up crashing in Tony's. I've never seen a smaller apartment in my life. Staying in his apartment floor. And I just spent days in Tony's bookstore, making sure my resume was right, looking for jobs, that sort of thing. And it was the most fun time I've ever had. Like, it was just discovering this new city and it was almost like one of those like 80s movies of, you know, small town boy going to New York and just like, oh, wow. It's just like, and I remember
Melbourne.
Like, it's a wonderful town. It was really strange because on my first day, like, I'd bought a pair of aviators, like mirrored aviators before. And I came down, I was just like, it's a new town. I can actually wear these. You know, no one knows me. I can just live this awesome life.
Yeah.
And I had these aviators on, which I couldn't really see much through because they were so mirrored. And I was walking down Smith Street and this guy's just gone, hey, man, they're really good aviators. Yeah, they look really good on you. And I went, oh, thanks. And he was just like, you look really good. Are you famous? And I was just like, no, I'm not. But thanks anyway. And then I realised he was just one of those charity dudes that was trying to get money out of me.
He was not. He was being genuine. Wow.
And I was just like, oh, small town boy, you've got to get your wits about you, man.
Oh, wow. Yeah, just give us $100 and I can save your life. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, well, no, I'm not famous. Oh, I could be, though. Get into this van and I'll take you places. All right.
But I mean, going back to the original question with Wigger, like, I went into the Laird, and the Laird is what we call a bear bar. And a bear is for hairy, older gentlemen, usually larger, which is my market. Is the market I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm not into hairy or older dudes, but I know that. And I went into the Laird and was nervous, just sort of like so scared. And it's genuinely really, really full on. It's like, it was, you know, I'd only ever been to a boring Newcastle gay bar.
Yeah.
And it was like the Blue Oyster. It was like leather. It was like a biker bar that I walked into.
Right.
And like really big dudes, really, really scary dudes, are just like, oh fuck, I couldn't fight my way out of this. And they'd just like, they'd come up to me. I remember one guy came up to me, really, really old dude, almost looked like Santa Claus. And he came up to me and undid my top two buttons and he went, there you go, hun, that looks much better. and at that point, I was just like, oh my God, they're genuinely really lovely and really nice.
Oh, that's great.
And obviously I'm fresh meat. But
yeah. There's a new man in town.
It was just so like, there you go. And like and in the actual fact, everyone was absolutely lovely and all of the like the facade of like a scary biker bar, it was just so like not actually true. It was just really lovely dudes that like to dress up and are into other lovely dudes. So
yeah,
it was so really, really fun.
So moving to Melbourne was just like, yep, this is so many things that you need it to be.
Yeah, it was.
I remember a couple of times going to that bar in Newcastle with you. It was not a pleasant atmosphere.
No, it was really bitchy and like I don't know. I never really liked it.
Yeah.
And I would just gamble there. I would just spend so much money just drinking and gambling because that was something to do.
At least, yeah, it was something to do. Yeah, went to the gay bar. I could have done it at West Leagues Club, but either way.
Yeah, that's right. I was just sort of, yeah, it's just sort of like, well, I'm going to get some pokies in, but then get smashed and, you know, hopefully someone will just talk to me and maybe I'll get laid.
Yeah.
Very rarely did it happen.
Okay, so let's move on from getting laid. I've got another question. Well, I don't know, maybe. There might be some unanswered question or mysteries unraveled here. But
excellent.
I don't know if you ever thought of it, but how lucky do you consider yourself to find that group of friends that you had coming out of high school? Because I went to university and I met Craig and Amy in drama class. And yeah. I think I connected with Craig as soon as he referenced like Flying High or Airplane or Caddyshack, whatever it was that he referenced, and or cricket. And then we were away. And then through him and Amy, I met this group of people who were just, I don't know how to describe them, just really solid people.
Yeah, and that's the exact same thing that would have happened from our side of things as well, like from like meeting you and Wigo and JC and like Emma.
Yeah.
Like these are people that are just absolutely amazing. It's quite strange. I'm so lucky. I'm really, really lucky because I think even though I said before, you know, I like consistency and I like change, I don't like change.
Yeah.
The fact is, like, I can suddenly just go, I want to change everything, and then it just switches.
Right.
So the thing was, going through high school, I didn't hang out with any of those guys.
Yeah.
None
really?
None of them whatsoever.
Huh.
So we did not have a relationship in high school apart from the fact that we were all in drama together.
Right.
That was the only thing. So I would have known Amy for many, many years. Amy and I went through primary school together.
Yeah.
And all the way through high school. But it was actually after year 12, after we all left, that we all started hanging out together. And all the guys that I used to hang out with, just have not, since I left that school, have not communicated with them once.
Right.
There was just like, oh, that's it, we're done. And that was it. And I started hanging out with Craig and Amy and Limbury,
yeah.
Matthew Limbury, and Heels.
Yeah.
And just went, these are the most awesome people in the world. And you know, spent my time, even though they went to uni and I went to TAFE.
But can you remember like how that happened? Like,
I think it would have definitely been a drama thing at the end.
Right.
It would have definitely been like, we would always hang out and do drama things because it was pretty intense. The HSE years of drama. Yeah. And it was a lot of spending time with each other. So me and Craig were doing the same. We're in the same drama group. And we're all in the same class. So I would suggest, my memory's not great on this,
yeah,
that we would have just started hanging out and after that, just to celebrate, probably would have been a night where we're just like, all the drama people go out and we'll all go out. And then we just kept on going out, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. That's the way I remember it. I don't think we really hung out that much at all during high school.
Right.
Now, towards the end.
I have a very important question. You said you were in Craig's HSE drama group. Can you remember the title of your HSE drama performance? Yeah.
I can't remember my individual work.
Yeah.
I can't remember. I don't think I gave it a name. I can't remember. But the group work was called Pity the Petty.
Something about like HSE titles. Just
horrific. Horrific.
So happily. Pity the Petty.
Pity the Petty. So all we did, and it was, we had to do a workshop in year 11,
yeah,
and we just ran with that workshop idea, even though it was just a training workshop idea.
Fair enough.
We basically just ran with that entire idea. And the basis of it was a guy dropping a minty wrapper in the park and then getting arrested by the police. And we just told that story from two different angles, right?
So perspectives, choices.
I know, choices, perspectives. And And I was actually only talking about this with Nick the other day. I was just like, there was an episode of The Simpsons, I think, when Mr. Burns ran down Bart in his car, and they just had two different perspectives of Mr. Burns driving to the orphanage and this horrible kid running in front. And like they both had these really different versions of the one story. And that was the entire premise that we ripped off. So it was the court case.
Beautiful.
The court case of retelling from Craig's perspective and then also the police officer's perspective.
Yeah, great. So what I always love about that kind of stuff is, like, in your what we'd call a logbook, you would have probably written stuff like, this is from the episode of The Simpsons, blah, 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 blah.
No? I think we were trying to be smarter than that. We weren't letting on that we just ripped it off.
Right. Oh, well, the fact that the markers are probably like, this is the Japanese film Rashomon, which is just where this idea originates that's been ripped off so many times. Yes, right. Well, I mean, you can feel, you know, a bit of shame about that. But if I tell you my individual HSC performance, I can't remember the title of it, but it was basically along the lines of, when you're a clown, no one takes you seriously.
Oh,
think about that.
I reckon you really went deep with that as well.
I don't think you've considered the depths of that, you know. I think the first in my draft, I believe I got up and I read Send in the Clowns as the starting point. And my teacher was like, lose that. That's don't do that. And I was like, okay. Yeah. Yeah. When you think about, like, the depths. Yeah. Because that was me. I was.
You were always the clown as well.
I was always the clown, and no one understood the depths of me. Anyway.
My individual work, I can't remember what I called it, but it was basically me in a prison jumpsuit.
just great. I'm there.
I didn't have enough of a monologue for the time. I can't remember what the time period had to be. It was a really long time period.
Yeah.
So I cut a massive excerpt out of Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. He ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
All right.
That one. Yeah. And also a part from Cozzy.
Yes. Wow, that's weird.
Where he explains burning his mum's house down.
Right, yes.
Because he accidentally burnt a cat. Well, he lit a cat on fire.
That's right. Lights a cat on fire and burns that.
So I had the entire jumpsuit. And then because I really loved Silence of the Lambs as well, I got myself a 6 foot perspex thing to stand in front of.
Right. Yep. Far out. This is just so good. This is so good. You don't know how happy I am.
Can I just say to you? Can I just say to you, these two things that I've described to you tonight, Pity the Petty and this, top 5% of the state with HSC performance. That's what I would like to say.
Top 5%?
Yes. Jesus. It was horrific.
No, that's great.
So, I just stood there. I just ripped off Silence of the Lambs, basically, but then also added in, actually, I think it was three things that, because I think it was like a massive monologue that you had to do.
Right.
It was parts of, also parts of Equus, the book Equus. So it was really fucked up, deep shit. Oh man.
Pushing the envelope.
Man.
So if you were top 5% of the state, you're doing drama, sounds like you're enjoying it.
Yeah,
I don't remember you getting up too often to do theatre sports when we ran.
No.
I didn't run it, but when it was run.
I really enjoyed it, but I remember I didn't, like, in high school, did lots of stage performances as well.
Yeah.
But I'd just be too nervous. I was on stage once, and I... when it was my line, I had a complete blank once.
Yeah.
And that was probably the most terrifying thing
right.
I have ever experienced. And I just, it's that moment where I was just like, I can't remember any of my lines right now. And just looking at the other actor, the fear in their eyes, and then turning and looking at the 100 or 200 people that were in the audience and just gave this and just went, shit. Oh God. Like, and then, you know, it may have just been like 5 seconds or something like that, but it felt like an eternity. And it was just this moment. Like, I was just like, I didn't know that you could just forget things on stage.
Well, it's similar to, I think I spoke about it in a previous episode, but like, just like bombing at Theatre Sports was like, I just couldn't go back. Like, you just like, and that, I guess that's the difference, right? People who really want to do it, go back. They just go, oh, I forgot all my lines. It was the worst moment of my life. I will go and try again. And now I'm going to, we might wrap it up, but I might,
all right,
we might finish on a more serious note. Which is talking about the loss of Pete for you. So Pete was a good friend of yours that you live with in Melbourne. You met him in Newcastle. Mm-hmm. Did he live in Denison as well?
He did live in Denison, yeah. He lived in your bedroom, actually.
Right. In Denison. I like that you call it my bedroom. That was very nice. The plaque is still there.
Well, funnily enough, I actually left that bedroom as well. I started in the small bedroom, or the $50 room.
The very hot small room, yes.
And then I went to the Wigo room from there, and then I actually moved into that room as well, into your room as well.
It's the best room.
Where, apart from the fact you could hear everyone pee.
Yes. Yeah, like I said, the best room.
Pete was... if that's what you like. But then on the other side as well, you could also hear if someone was having sex in that room, which they were very thin walls. That's a story for another time. I hired Pete, who's a delivery driver at Pizza Hut.
Yeah.
And when someone moved out, I was just like, does anyone know anyone who wants to move in to pay $55 a week?
And, so expensive.
So expensive. And his eyes just lit up and went, I want to do that. And he moved in, and he, we got on like a house on fire. Really got on there like a house on fire, and lived there for a little while together. He also moved down to Melbourne. A couple of years, I think, before I did.
Okay.
That was great. He was living in Brunswick and I was living in Carlton with Craig. It was really, really cool. He was living with an awesome dude who's a good friend of mine now, Andy, who was a music journalist. And so we'd go to so many gigs, and it was just a great, great time to come to Melbourne and go to awesome, awesome gigs.
Yeah.
Craig left and came back to Newcastle, and Andy, who Pete was living with, he moved to Sydney. So we were just like, let's move in again. So we moved in and lived with each other for many, many years, quite a few years. I think in total it would have been about 8 years we lived together.
Wow.
Didn't realize it was Jesus. Yeah. Yeah, it was a really, really long time. I can't remember the original question, sorry.
So, like, you live with him for 8 years, but...
And he was my best friend as well.
Yeah, and he's your best friend, but he was obviously struggling, right? He struggled with alcohol and...
Yeah, he definitely struggled with alcohol. I don't think I was in a great place with my use of alcohol as well. But at the same time, I could sort of control things. I was in no way an alcoholic or anything like that. Pete was unfortunately an alcoholic and would do some pretty destructive behavior. It would be basically every night he would drink.
Yeah.
And to the point of blacking out every night as well. So he moved out into a place in Richmond with some other people. And I think he realized how much I was sort of protecting him.
Right. Yeah. I was going to say that.
Protecting his behavior.
Yeah. I was going to say how difficult was it for you to obviously, like you said, protecting his behavior and it, you know, not doing anything or not
yeah, it's quite difficult because he was never himself. He was never a person that was himself. He would be really shy and reserved and very uncomfortable. But then a few drinks in, he would be really great, really engaging, great conversations. We'd talk about movies and music for hours and hours. But then there would be this point where it's just he's gone too far.
Yeah.
And he's too drunk and he's doing stupid things. He's not making sense and he's very aggressive or he's not in a good place, and that would be basically when you started to realize, oh, this is a bit of a pattern.
Yeah.
It's not very good. And so when he moved out, he didn't last long and he was kicked out of that place and had to live by himself.
Yeah.
He'd sort of managed to keep things going really well. He'd focused on computer games and had become an academic in the computer games sort of area and was sort of lecturing, I think, at that stage. But he was living by himself and not taking care of himself, not even turning up to work. And they eventually gave him the boot as well.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he really pushed me away, but at the same time I just kept on trying to connect with him. And probably the worst thing that I had to do, which I just had to do, was eventually call his mum and just go, I think there's a problem.
Yeah.
I think he's driving himself into the ground, drinking. And there was times where I had to call the ambulance as well. I'd consistently expect to find him passed out, you know, at 12 o'clock in the middle of the day. So I called his mum and got her to come down from Newcastle, and he had treatment, but he got back. Yeah, he was drinking again.
So just moving past that, what's it like, or what was it like for you, just in general, to like lose a friend so young, I guess?
There was a lot of guilt, I think.
Right.
generally because I was sort of always thinking, why can I handle it and you can't? And also it was becoming a bit of a problem for me keeping an eye on him and I lived pretty close to him. So it would be sort of left to me, just like no one could get in contact with him. Scott, can you go down?
Right.
So I would ride down and check to see whether he was alive, basically. And that was quite painful having to do that when I didn't want to have to deal with that.
Yeah.
So when he passed away, he passed away of an aneurysm. He basically had a clot in his heart, and he had a heart attack and died. But it was basically because he'd been consistently living on cheap wine, and cigarettes, and just not sleeping. So he was a bit of a sort of like a walking zombie in the end. And so there was a lot of guilt and a lot of relief. And also probably the biggest thing was that I need to sort of investigate my relationship with alcohol as well. And figure out what I was doing with my life as well. It's kind of like, I think in the end, at the time, it was pretty fucking horrible.
Yeah,
that could happen to me.
Right.
There was a lot of guilt, I think, was the biggest thing. I remember the last day that I saw him alive, I went over and knocked on the door, didn't answer the door. I used the spare key to get in. And I found him passed out on his bed, and I thought he was dead. at that stage. I shook him and he wouldn't wake, and shook him and he wouldn't wake. And then he woke up and he'd pissed himself, and he was in a horrible way. He was really, really drunk.
Yeah.
And I was frustrated and angry. I was just like, man, you've got to sort yourself out. You can't be doing this. You've got to go back to AA.
Yeah.
We've got to do something about this. And I knew that his mum was coming down in the next few days as well. And he said, hug me.
Right.
And I was just like, no, man, you've pissed yourself. I don't want to hug you. And he's just like, please hug me. And that's all I could get from him.
Yeah.
And I didn't. And I really regret doing that. So, yeah, a lot of regret, a lot of guilt. But at the same time, I think that I went beyond what I could have done. Whether I could have done more, I don't know.
But I'm not going to
waste time worrying about that. I don't think I could have done any better. I've analyzed it over and over again.
What I was going to ask, and it sounds like he obviously couldn't have done more, and that you did more. You were doing more than anyone else in literally in the world. If you want to look at it that way, in that perspective. But how do you come out the other side of that? It sounds like it's probably still ongoing, but like, how do you weigh that, I guess?
You know what? I don't know how. I've never lost a parent. I Pete's the closest I've lost. I did have a baby sister but I was like 3 when she died. She died at childbirth. So I haven't really experienced grief as an adult. And it was really fucking hard. It's that horrible sort of thing. That the worst thing is, I think, that first few seconds when you wake up in the morning and you wake up feeling really good, and then you realize, oh fuck,
yeah,
someone who I really loved is no longer there. But you know, it's a tacky cliche, but with time it goes on, it does get better and it gets easier, I suppose.
Yeah.
Also, I met, probably a little bit after that, a year after that, I met Nick as well.
Yeah.
And Nick was dealing with the grief of losing his dad to a brain tumor. And so I think we were able to empathize with each other and sort of, it's, I think when you lose someone really close to you and it's really raw, you sort of feel like you're the only person that's feeling that.
Yeah.
And so it was good to have that person that had that empathy with you. So we're back to empathy.
Yeah. You scripted it nicely. But a lot of people talk of that. It's you know, the same, the high points and the low points of your life. You walk around the world, in the world, wondering why the world isn't feeling the same way you are. Like, how can you be carrying along like normal when this has happened?
I think that, like, it horrifies me because I don't know how I'm going to feel when a parent or a partner dies.
Yeah.
But I know that eventually it will not hurt as much.
Yeah.
And that's kind of encouraging, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think sometimes we sort of, I don't know where we get the idea or assume that it'll hurt and then it'll go away, but it doesn't go away. It never goes away. It might hurt less.
Yeah, it's still there. It is still there, but I don't know. I think it's started like a bit of the healing process is when you sort of forget a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, And it was because it was so raw, because I felt like I was keeping this person on life support, and then eventually I couldn't do it anymore. And, you know, I know that's not what happened, but that's kind of what it felt like. Eventually I sort of forgot the horror around it, and the horror of seeing his face, wanting to have a hug,
yeah,
and not being able to do that, and right. the horror of, you know, seeing his body getting wheeled out and put into a van. And so I forgot those things, and when I forget those things, I can then remember the good things, if that makes sense.
That does.
So you get a bit of time, you get a bit of distance, and the shitness of the experience sort of disappears, and you just sort of remember the amount of awesome times where we were, you know, smoking a cigar and talking about, you know, how I think Tarantino is brilliant and he thinks Tarantino's shit, and, you know, and those great moments. I guess it's one of those things that you know that you're going to be able to deal with things a little bit better. Hopefully you are.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all you can really hope for, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Suri. Thanks for talking to us. And that's it.
Really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
No worries, man. I got Wigo to listen to it as well. And I said, prepare yourself. And he went, okay. And then he sent a text that said, I wasn't prepared. I wasn't prepared enough.
I was really worried whether it was, I don't know how it sounds, but it was a bit of a blur there.
So we don't normally do this on the chattering classes, but we're meeting, I don't know, a week or so after we chatted with Scott, and I've got Ben Wiggins here. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Matthew, and hello, Scott.
Hello, Ben. Hello, Matthew.
Yeah, I think I called you Scott in like the first 20 seconds, and then I just referred to you as Sooty throughout the entire. Where does the nickname Sooty come from?
Sooty came from Amy Owens stuffing up a birthday, writing on a birthday card for me.
That's awesome.
So she wrote Scotty, and an actual the C sort of looped around to look like Sooty.
That's fantastic. So that's where Sooty came from. And then it was just like, yep, perfect.
But I went with the double T because that's how it was created. And then I think Tony Sidebottom pointed out that it actually doesn't sound like Sooty. It's actually Sooty. I'm not an English teacher. Maddie, how would you say S-O-O-T-T-Y?
I'd say, Sootai, I guess, is what it would come out as. But yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
There's no semantics when it comes to
nicknames.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
That's right.
I just wanted to go over a few things. One thing mainly was you talking about, obviously, Pete and then the impact that had on you. In listening back to the podcast, it ends sort of like you tell the story and then I'm like, cool, thanks, man. Bye. And then out we went. I and Wiggins listened to it as well. Because yes, he sometimes is quality control, but usually he just likes to eavesdrop more than anything else.
Yeah, pretty much. I like to get it before anyone else.
Yeah, he wants to be special.
Patreon listener.
Yeah, so if you want to get it before anyone else hears it, then just message me and say, can I listen to an early episode and I'll send it to you. we were listening to it and I don't know. It had a big impact on both of us, and just I can't speak for Wigo, but I certainly was thinking about it for a while. I got Justine to listen to it. She, as I said, is a much better person than I am, because her first response is, "Did you ask Sooty if he wants to publish this?" And I was like, "Oh, I didn't even think of that.
I think we sort of had a little bit of a debrief after we recorded, and I've always sort of thought my life's a bit of an open book, so I don't have any issues with it. I hope it doesn't sound bad.
No,
I don't know. I don't. Yeah.
You mean in terms of
It was a little bit raw, but it's been quite a few years since I've probably talked about it, or even thought about it, so.
So what I wanted to maybe point out is that, well, is that I like it, obviously I got a sense that you still carried that around with you in some way, and I wondered whether it was the you carried the guilt or it was just your way of carrying Pete, if you know what I mean.
I think the thing is that when I was reflecting on it after our conversation was I can remember a lot of the good times now, and because there was a lot of bad times towards the end, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it was kind of nice to sort of reflect on that. There is a lot of guilt, but it's also the fact that to sort of take a bit of a further step back, I had another friend who had an alcohol dependency problem in Newcastle, and he was able to turn his life around. And he was now like 24 years sober. So in my head, we were going to get Pete sober.
Yeah.
And he was going to have an amazing life.
Right.
And unfortunately, it didn't have that end. So there's a lot of regret in the fact that we couldn't really sort of keep that going, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, that's right.
But in the end, you know, there's been a lot of debriefing and a lot of sort of analysing the whole thing. And there is a lot of guilt, but at the same time, you know, there's not much else I could have done as well, if that makes sense.
No. And, I mean, Wigo and I were also talking about the fact that if I actually said, and I believe I sent this to Wigo, I said, would you have hugged me if I was covered in piss? And he said, no. And I said, me too.
Well, there's also quite a lot of context around that. It's not like you've just walked in, covered in piss and asked for a hug. Like the backstory had quite a lot to do with it. And that was, that was the first time I'd heard that story, Sooty. So it blew me away.
It was a pretty, you know, it was a pretty horrible moment because it was one thing that, you know, I really could have given him, and it's something I've been told many, many times I'm a good hugger, and it was one of those things that all you had to do was give him a hug.
Yeah.
But that hug wouldn't have changed anything.
No, all it would have done is...
He would never have remembered that hug. No. He never remembered anything. So.
That's what I said to Justine. Like, really, like, all that hug would have done was to remove the guilt of you not giving him a hug. Like, that's all that's based on, right?
100%. And I think that I'm sure most people, I'm presuming this, that most people who have lost someone when it's far too young overanalyze everything about the situation. And I think when his mum called me and told me that he'd passed away, I was working at the time, so I missed the call. And then I rang her back and I just went, straight away, I just went, let me guess, he's up to it again. And she went, actually, Scott, he's passed away.
Yeah,
and that made me feel like an absolute dickhead, so sort of like, absolutely worst thing to say to someone who's just found their dead son.
Yeah.
So, I'm completely fine. I don't know about his family or how they would feel about me talking about it. I'm sure that they would be okay. But
awesome.
Yeah. Right. It was pretty full on, but
All right. Well, again, thank you for talking that way and talking about it so openly. One of the things we didn't cover in the episode was, can I ask you yet another personal question?
Oh, fucking hell.
This is why I'm here, Scotty.
Yeah, this is why we go here as well. We want to know.
Oh, Jesus.
Do you have Yahoo Serious?
Oh. I may have Yahoo Serious.
Right.
Do you have 2 minutes?
We've got. I can edit, of course. So yeah, for sure.
I think
Sooty is now leaving the chat. Sooty is fossicking away. This is amazing podcasting. Luckily, it isn't live. Should I just keep this whole bit in of just a man fossicking around his room?
Fossick.
Well, I can see it.
Fuck off. That is
There it is.
Sorry, I'm back.
Okay, so let me just set the scene as to what we're, what the hell we're talking about. I'll keep it keep it up there, Sudhi. I want to keep looking at him. So in my very first teaching prac was at, what high school was it? Cardiff? Cardiff High School. And one night when we were there, for a trivia night, I want to say. No?
Theatre sports.
Oh, God. Yes, it was terrible. Right, now I'm with it. Horrific. Yes, we went to do a theatre sports night. It was a year after I'd been teaching there, and I felt bad that I'd invited everyone. Sorry, so to go.
It was pretty horrific, if I remember correctly. It was a lot of parents that were there, and they just didn't like swearing, didn't like anything that was funny about the sexual, innuendo or anything, which is all just the only reason why theatre sports is interesting.
That's right. You know, it's
just really, really poo jokes and
poo jokes and fluid jokes, and that's all you want.
The thing, apart from the obvious, like apart from the point of the story, one of my favourite things about this particular evening was that Sudhi and I sort of showed up and sat at the back. Trying to be supportive. We were there to be supportive. And then we just sort of looked at each other at one stage and then went, I think we've got to get out of here. But we couldn't just get up and leave. So we spent about 8 to 10 minutes just moving our chairs back towards the back of the room. So these two people just basically moved to the back of the room and then we just got up and left.
Yes.
And then...
So in the foyer of Cardiff High School is all their alumni, all the famous people who have gone through the doors of Cardiff High School. Most of them you would never have heard of. But
one
I think
of the tap dogs.
One of the tap
Definitely
dogs.
Definitely one of the tap dogs.
But I'd already mentioned, like on my first day of prac, was that Yahoo Sirius went to Cardiff High and there was an amazing picture of Yahoo Sirius. And so we do our lovely evening of theatre sports and the boys leave and we catch up with them later. This is Sudhi and we go, is this while you were living there, Sudhi, or before?
Yeah.
So yeah. It must have been 2000 and we maybe get home and Sudhi and we go just have the hugest smiles on their faces. I go, what is so funny? What the hell? What's so funny? And Sudhi just pulls it out from behind his back and hold it up for us, Sudhi, so we can see it. I'll see. And so what, can you take me through the actual taking of this picture of Yahoo Sirius?
I'm pretty sure we walked out and I think we looked at the wall and we're about to keep on walking out. And I'm pretty sure we both had this, we've got to take that. And
we actually walked out the front door, Sudhi. I think we walked out the front door and then went back in because it was just in that corridor as we come out of the hall.
Is there a statute of limitations on this, by the way, just before I say anything?
I believe so. It's 21 years ago. I believe we'll be hard-pressed to find a court that wants to take this to trial.
I'm so nervous. I was quite openly able to talk about my dead friend, but I'm nervous as hell talking about stealing. Yeah. And I think we walked back in and I was scared shitless. And I thought it'll just be like easy to just pop off the wall.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure Wego had to wrench it off and it made quite a sound. Did it, Wego? Or is that in my head?
And we ran, man. Like we ran like scared little children and jumped in your little, was it the
Suzuki Swift?
It was in the Suzuki, yes. And we putted out of that high school car park.
It was like Ocean's 11. It was the heist of the century, and I went out there tire burning, and we absolutely flew out of there. Probably I just needed an excuse to drive really fast as well. So pretty much drove most of the way home like that. But I think also that was the night where we didn't have anything to do after that. So we drove around for about 2 hours with German accents, just just keep on giving each other German accents and talking about how good it would be to get back. Yeah. And so we just drive around just for like, talking in German
accents. Oh, yeah, it's very good. Very nice.
Very nice. But as an epilogue to that story...
Sorry, just to jump in. There we go. I literally sent Sudian a message last week that said, "How did we do an hour of the podcast without descending into German accents?" I don't know. It's amazing.
I distinctly remember it. It could have been 2 or 3 hours one night, and me and Wigger had nothing to do. We were just talking about how good it would be to get some. Get a bag of something. I don't know whether I'm allowed to talk about that. and just talking just over and over again in German accents. And I'm pretty sure it was German, or was it?
Yep. I'm pretty sure it was German Arnold too. Schwarzenegger.
Maybe some type of Austrian lilt on occasion.
A little bit of Austrian in there, yeah.
Yeah. Some kind of Eastern European country, I'm sure.
I'm pretty sure that's what everyone did in Newcastle. That's why they do laps in their cars. They're just talking in German.
So then we had that up in our house, and then, crazy of all crazies, it was on the news, because Yahoo Serious was promoting his wonderful film. Can you remember the name of the film?
Reckless Kelly?
No, it was after Reckless Kelly.
Oh.
Now, I only know this because it was on a videotape I had when I was living by myself, and it was at the end of something.
Of a Seinfeld thing.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Like there's a lot of Seinfeld episodes. And then there was a clip. I don't know if we were watching the news one day and it said, coming up after the break, Yahoo Serious, back to his old school. And we're like, what? I better film this. And there he is promoting Mr. Accident.
Accident, of course.
Everyone knows that movie, so we don't have to go into too much detail. It's world famous, no doubt.
I was actually at work that day and heard on the radio, Yahoo Serious is that kind of high to replace the stolen photo.
Yeah.
He was handed, and then I got home and saw it on the news. And then the next day, it was in the newspaper as well. And I was just like, we've finally made it.
He was on
the 15 minutes.
He was on the news because mainly just to promote his film. Any opportunity to get his promotion of this film, no one went to see. But he was like, oh, yeah, I came to Cardiff. And then, someone told me they stole my picture. But, that's all right. That's something I would have done if I was at school. And I was like, all right, I don't think we're going to get in trouble for this.
That's right. We've been signed off.
We've been signed off by Yahoo himself.
Some kids did get in trouble for it because just a friend of ours' mum, she worked at the school, and all the naughty kids got brought into the principal's office and they were interrogated.
So who stole the Yahoo?
We weren't children at that stage. No. We were well out of
you school. Ran. You ran like children.
Yes.
Oh. And yes, so now that is, and I can't believe it's so great you've still got it all these years later. Oh, beautiful.
That is amazing, because I thought at one stage, Sudhi, you'd feared it had been lost.
I don't know where it's gone. It's a little bit mildewy in the back.
Oh, yep.
There was also some articles that I had kept as well, but I think I've got rid of since, that may have been from some modeling that Wigo did for a couple of friends of ours that were doing some writing for a...
All right, that's all the time we have for the chattering classes this week. Join us next week when we talk about other things that aren't so criminal.
That aren't really going to get people into trouble.
Can't air any of this.
That would be like we've got 30 seconds to add to the end of the episode. Oh, all right. Well, let me just stop recording.